For much of his life, Henry Darger was almost invisible. He was an odd man, a janitor, whose outside life revolved around going to church and monitoring the weather. But in death, he's become well-known and honored. He's inspired books, a musical, and now a documentary. Henry Darger was a talented and troubled artist who created his own mystical world full of heroic little girls fighting battles against evil. His life's work was a 15,000-page epic known as In the Realms of the Unreal. Filmmaker Jessica Yu's new film about Darger has the same name. And Jessica Yu joins us from member station KPCC in Pasadena. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
How did you first learn about Henry Darger?
I first saw his work at the LA County Museum of Art. It must have been over 12 years ago. It was an outsider art show, and I just remember being so struck by his work. They just had a few paintings, but the subject matter was so perverse. If you were to describe it to somebody, you know, there were these naked little girls with penises running around with rifles and fighting these men and these strange landscapes, yet they were done with such innocence. And I don't think I had ever seen that quite that combination of sensibility before.
Well, you weave his work in your documentary with some of his life story. Let's listen to a bit.
In this story, for more than 43 years, child slavery existed in the Calverinian country. Hundreds of thousands of children torn from their parents, made to work themselves to death without getting a cent, and horrors upon horrors almost equal that of perdition.
To free the children, the Christian nation of Abiania wages a 4.5-year war against the godless Glandolidian slave owners. Leading the child slave rebellion are the 7 Vivian girl princesses.
Daisy, Hetty, Violet, Joyce, Jenny, Angeline, and Catherine.
Once you start to know about his early life, he had a very tough childhood. You know, his mother died when he was very young, giving birth to his sister, who was put up for adoption. And then he was shuttled back and forth from, you know, boys' homes to this terrible asylum for feeble-minded children.
And we should say this is a while ago. He died in 1974.
That's right. So we're talking about, you know, his childhood happened around the early part of the century. And he ran away from the asylum and ended up really living on his own and sort of stayed that way for the rest of his life. So once you hear about what happened to him, the themes of the novel, as strange as it is, really start to make sense, and you get a sense of who this person was who was creating this, this seemingly bizarre story.
Well, tell me more about this world he created.
Well, in this world, you have these very virtuous little girls who are sort of leading this fight against evil, and it is very much a story of good versus evil. It's almost as if you had crossed the Oz books with the Old Testament. You'd get something like In the Realms of the Unreal. And, you know, the themes of wanting to escape to home, to reunite with family, these are very strong themes in the book. And then, of course, there's many, 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 many battles. So it seems to have been a source of excitement, I think, to create.
Can you describe some of the pictures? Tell us what he drew and painted.
Some of them are very sort of pastoral landscapes, and he would create his own flora and fauna, and what he would do is he would use collaged pieces of material from, you know, newspapers and cartoons and things, and use those to make his own creations. There would be little girls with wings and all sorts of strange flying creatures. And then there, of course, were the battle scenes where you have these soldiers who are, the evil ones are dressed in Confederate uniforms and wear mortarboards. You gotta love that. And it's just very hard to describe how fantastic and singular this vision he had was. I mean, he was an extremely driven person for 60 years of his life creating this world, which was a place that he really lived in to a large extent. I mean, he had a job, you know, he worked in these Catholic hospitals and had very tedious work to do there. And I really feel like his imagination was where all the fulfillment and excitement of his life took place.
Well, at several points, you use a collage of interviews to show how little people really knew this man. I mean, they couldn't agree on how he pronounced his name or even where he sat in the church that he attended every day.
He sat right up front pew.
In the back, he was sitting in the back pews because he had his own little pew in the back and nobody else would be around him.
I was in the middle. Never in back, never in front. Always by himself.
Right. I know that when I was getting those interviews, I couldn't believe what I was hearing because I believed all these people. I believed in their memories. It's just that they didn't remember the same thing. And I think it speaks to how invisible Henry Darger was in his real life. People kind of looked after him, but he didn't have any real connections with people. And I think that this was also part of what the film was exploring. I mean, it was almost like Darger was testing this idea that a man could be an island. And that's sort of the question of the film. Was it enough? Can you have a fulfilling, satisfying life only having relationships and really living in the fabric of your own imagination? And in the end, I don't know that that's an answerable question.
Now, what about, you mentioned these little naked girls with penises.
Right.
People speculate about this in the film. What are the theories?
Well, I think when people see Darger's work, what they do remember is that there are naked little girls with penises. What's remarkable about it to me is that Darger never mentions it as though this is something to notice. So after a while, they become sort of invisible. But there are a lot of theories about it. No one really knows for sure. People have speculated everything from, oh, he didn't know the difference between a boy and a girl, to him trying to connect with the sister who was put up for adoption. I let there be a group of interpretations.
Henry Darger's work has inspired other artwork. There's been a play, now your film. Why do you think his work has proved so compelling?
I think people are drawn to both the unique sensibility of the work. I mean, the sort of perverse subject matter and this innocence, this lack of irony in its presentation. There's that. A lot of the work is just very strangely beautiful. And then I think people are also drawn to the fact that he was creating this work in isolation and that he was so driven, yet he wasn't driven to share it with others. And I think that there's something very pure about its sensibility that way, that it really was just for his own pleasure and satisfaction.
And it was discovered pretty much after his death.
That's right. There is a tantalizing clue in the film of how he might have felt about all this, is that the man who lived down the hall discovered his work when Henry was pretty much on his deathbed, and he said to him, you know, Henry, we found some of your paintings and they're beautiful. And there was this sort of sharp intake of breath, and Darger said, well, too late now. And it's enigmatic, just like everything about Darger. But at the same time, there's sort of this wistful acknowledgement of what may have been.
Filmmaker Jessica Yu's new documentary is called In the Realms of the Unreal. You can see images from Henry Darger's art at npr.org. Jessica Yu, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you so much for having me.